We're doing the book of Judges, and we had learned about Devorah, whose husband prepared lamps for people to walk in at night. And Devorah, who was so modest and careful to sit under a palm tree so that there would be no room for doubt as to what was happening with her and the people who came and asked her questions. And Devorah, who had a lot of wealth, she had palm trees, an investment in the palm production of Jericho. She owned vineyards in Ramah. She owned olive orchards in Beit El, where olives grow well. And she owned in the mountainous region of Ephraim, she owned a special plot of land where they would quarry earth from in order to produce special pottery. So she had her real estate scattered around Israel, a very wealthy woman and a very learned woman. And she was the judge. She was the leader of the Jewish people at the time. And she summons Barak ben Avinoam from the north, from Kedesh and the tribe of Naphtali. So we just drew Kedesh up there, right near the Kinneret. It's somewhere near the Kinneret, near the northern tip of the Kinneret, because the tribe of Naphtali is situated in the north, north of the Kinneret. So she summons Barak ben Avinoam. According to some opinions, he was actually her husband. And she tells him, you know, God says, go and gather the Jews to Mount Tabor. So we drew Mount Tabor up there, not far from Kadesh. Mount Tabor is a mountain, not far from the Kinneret, somewhere west of the Kinneret. And she says, take with you 10,000 men from which tribes? Which tribes are right there by Mount Tabor? The tribe of Naphtali, the tribe of Zvulun. Those are the two tribes that are situated right there. So he himself is from the tribe of Naphtali. And she's telling him, summon the tribe of Zvulun, your neighbors, to come with you. And you will go to the Kishon Valley, and I will attract Sisra to come with you. He is the chief general. We discussed how Sisra was a very lethal general. He alone was a danger to the Jewish people, aside from his powerful army. And Barak tells her, you come with me, I'll go. And if you don't come, I won't go. And she says, fine, I'll come. But you should know, if you need me, you will lose your glory. Hashem will give Sisra in the hands of a woman. And Barak goes to Zvon and Naphtali, and he gathers 10,000 men, which is unique, because the odds are stacked against them. The army of Yavin, the army whose chief general is Sisra, is an opponent which they cannot stand up against. It will take miracles, open miracles, to win. And we discussed last week that they had, together with them, they had free mercenaries. Nations joined to fight us for free. And Barak gathers the people, and Sisra prepares to charge. He has 900 chariots. It's like having 900 tanks. That's almost a tank against every 10 people, against every 11 people. Go stand up to a tank. We discussed once how their chariots used to have blades coming out of the side, they had spears coming out of the side, so the horses were covered with armor, and they charged forward, and you just couldn't stand up to that. So they have these 900 chariots with all their metal weaponry, and Devorah tells Barak, go! Hashem's given Sisra in your hands. Hashem's leading the way. And Barak charges down from the mountain. Now, ordinarily, you want the upper hand. So you stay on top of the mountain. It's an easier way to fight. Devorah tells him, go charge him. That means he has to go down to the valley. He loses the advantage of being on top of the mountain. You can't charge a mountain with your chariots. He loses that advantage too. So he's risking his life because the prophet told him, go. And he's going down into the valley where theoretically Sisra has the upper hand. And he goes downward, and Hashem stuns the camp of Sisra. What happens? This valley, which would ordinarily be dry, Nachal Kishon Girafam. So they're in that valley where ordinarily you'd have very little water, if any at all. And Hashem causes a huge flood to come down the valley. And Sisra and his men are swept away. They can't stand up. Before Barak could even do anything, Barak charges. But the waters of the Kishon Valley do much of the job for him. And Sisra and his camp is stunned. And they're on the run. And Barak and his men keep chasing and killing the men of Sisra. And we discussed how that Sisera and his men were known for violating Jewish women and being exceptionally cruel in their attacks on the Jews. And Sisera runs. Now right near there was a man named Chever from the family of Yisro. And even though the family of Yisro lived in the deserts, he came and lived right there near that section, near where the war was. And he and his family lived there and they had peaceful terms with Sisera and his men. So, Yael, who is the wife of Chever, Yael comes out of the tent and she approaches Sisera and she says, "Come here, my master, come here, don't worry." And he comes to the tent and she covers him with a simicha. Now, this is a beautiful thing. What does the word simicha mean? Right. Simicha does not appear anywhere in Tanakh but here. So we don't know what the word simicha means. In modern Hebrew, they made it mean blanket. But in Tanakh, you won't find the word simicha anywhere. Our sages say the word simicha is really a conjunction of two words. Shemi ko. Hashem saying, "My name is here. I testify that nothing improper happened between her and him." So that's one opinion. And yet if you look in the Talmud, there's another opinion that goes the exact opposite. That says that Yael slept with him. She said the only way to take him down is to wear him down. And if I don't do this, then he will establish a new army. And as we discussed earlier, he was as formidable a threat as the rest of the army. If they had wiped out the rest of the army, but not him, the Jewish people were still in danger. So he asks her, "Give me some water to drink." And she pours him a cup of milk. And milk can cause a person to be more sleepy. And she wants to see, will he catch on that I've given him milk instead of water? And when he doesn't catch on, she realizes he's finished. And he's just been to war. And he's totally tired. So he tells her, "You stand at the entrance to the tent. If anyone comes here and asks, is there anyone here? Don't start telling them stories, just say no." So he lies down and falls into deep slumber. Now Yael has to find a way to kill him. So she goes and takes the spoke out of the tent and she approaches him with the spoke and the hammer. Right? How's she going to kill him with a spoke? She puts the spoke down on his temple where the head is soft, and with a strong bang, she knocks the spoke through his temple, through his skull, into the ground. Powerful woman. Now, we have to understand who Yael was. We read the story, and we think this was a macho woman. Who was Yael? Our sages say Yael was known for her kindness, her gentil, that she never fought with her husband. Whatever her husband asked her, she'd say, "Yes, dear," in a positive way. She was a woman who was smart and gentle and kind and never fought with her husband. The Talmud says, what was extraordinary about Yael? That Yael was always peaceful. She was always looking to make things work out. And so whatever her husband asked her, she'd find a way to say yes. She never fought him. But here you see that she did it out of strength, not out of weakness. Because when the time came that she had to stand up to Sisera, so then her inner strength came out. There was once a woman who said, a woman said herself, "A woman is like a tea bag. You don't know her strength till you put her in boiling water." So Yael, you might not have known her strength. Along comes the Tanakh and tells us, and we're going to see that in Dvorah's song, Yael is compared to the matriarchs. Dvorah in her song will say she is blessed like the women of the tent. So she takes down Sisera. The whole Jewish army, 10,000 men, couldn't take him down. But Yael does. Barak is chasing, looking, where did Sisera go? When Sisera's army had made an about face and tried to run back to Charoshet HaGoyim, to their hometown, Sisera realized that they wouldn't make it, that the Jews on the chase would catch up to them and kill them. So Sisera ran a different direction. Everyone else ran away from battle. Sisera ran in the location of battle looking. He saw, I can make it there to Yael, to the tent of Chever. So he goes there. And after Barak realizes that they haven't caught the chief general, he comes back looking. Where is Sisera? And he comes and Yael goes out to greet him and says, go, I'll show you the man you seek. He comes in. And Sisera is getting up and falling dead. And he finds him dead. And with that, we begin our great victory about Yavin, the king of Canaan, until finally we finished him off. This was just the beginning. And we have the famous song of Devorah together with Barak, the prophetic song. We discussed much of the song earlier about how the people had ran away. You remember Meroz, he was a wealthy person who lived right near the location of the war, and he didn't get involved. He said, I want to have nothing to do with it. And so Dvorah is going to curse him, and from Dvorah's curse, we learn many laws of Cheirem. What does it mean that when a person is put into halachic ostracization, so that's what Dvorah did to him. Dvorah discusses that people were scared to go draw water, lest the Canaanites hear them, and now they can go out. Dvorah discusses how people were fearful of living in cities that did not have walls. They'd only live in fortified cities, and now people can live in open cities. That's an ongoing argument between Rav Shatzim. Rav Shatz is the one in charge of security in a yeshuv. So some say a yeshuv must be without walls. That way you could keep expanding, and you don't have to be scared of anything. And others say you have to have fences or something to protect you. So that's an argument. That's an ongoing argument. What's more secure? Some say once you build a fence, you never continue expanding, and that means the Arabs turned you into a ghetto. They can keep expanding without limit, and you won't expand because you built the fence. And others say, but without a fence, you won't have security. So today they try to do security with cameras, etc. But this was a sign of weakness. It is a sign of weakness that you have to live in a walled city. And Dvorah says, all of this, things were going bad, ad shakamti Dvorah, till I arose Dvorah. And our sages say, Dvorah was a giant. We don't begin to understand what a great woman she was. Yet, in this sentence, there was a minuscule element of arrogance. Something that's beyond us, but our sages say that when she said that, in heaven, they said she shouldn't have spoken that way. And from that moment onward, she lost her prophecy. And that's why she says, Uri, Uri, Devorah. Arouse, Devorah. She begs to regain her prophetic spirit, but she won't. This is the end of her prophecy, because she spoke that way. So Devorah describes the victory of Israel. She describes the tribes that kept the distance, each one hedging their bets. In case the Jews lost, they'd be able to run. You remember we said Dan prepared himself. Remember, Dan has their territory near the sea. So they were prepared. The tribes on the eastern side of the Jordan were prepared to run. Everyone was prepared to run in case the Jews lost. They weren't coming to help in war. Zvulun risked their lives. Naphtali risked their lives. Those were the two tribes who united to fight them. And she makes mention of all the kings who came for free to fight us. The kings who were free mercenaries. And so Hashem sent stars. It says there must have been some kind of shooting stars. All kinds of stars came and did unnatural things to demolish Sisera's army. Now, it could be that what she means is that the tides did not go in their order. We know that the tides, there's high tide, there's low tide. There are times when waters go in accordance with the stars, with the moon. Those who surf know this, that based on the sun and the moon, you could know when you'll have a higher tide and a lower tide, depending on where the sun and the moon are in relation to the earth. And if you're in the northern hemisphere, southern hemisphere, time of the year. Once there's a shift in the stars, it affects all the tides. Right, a shooting star, a comet, a passing planet can also have its magnetic effect on the waters of planet Earth. So, one understanding here is that when Dvorah says that the heavens fought Sisera, the stars fought Sisera, it doesn't mean that a comet came down and crashed into his army, but the shift in the stars caused the tides to shift, so that Sisera's army was swept by the Kishon Valley. Yes?
Is that, a, is is that a Jewish, common Jewish idea to think, like, I know that God put nature in place and that he uses nature to do his acts. Like, I know Dr. Schroeder from Aish was able to explain how, you know, an east wind comes this way, the Jordan River can split, and the Sea of Reeds can also split. So he's using nature to describe, like, a godly phenomenon. Is that, that's not anti-Jewish, right?
That's a long discussion. Thursday night. I want to give you a longer answer. And she concludes her song. She describes Sisera's mother sitting by the windowsill, wondering, why is Sisera not coming back yet? Why is he being detained? And her wise women would tell her, and she would comfort herself and say, must be, they're capturing so many women, they're violating so many Jewish women, and they're conquering so much nice scarves and clothing from them. That's why they're being detained. So in that cruelty, where a woman doesn't have mercy for another woman, Dvorah concludes her song and says, just as Sisera was lost, so too all the enemies of Hashem should be lost. And those who love Hashem should be like the sun that keeps getting stronger through the day. Our sages say that this description of Sisera's mother sitting and waiting for Sisera and shedding a few tears and crying is a true description. She actually did sit that way. Dvorah the prophet is describing something that in fact happened. And our sages say that her tears have a weight in heaven. That's an interesting thing. We see Esav cries because he lost the blessings, because Jacob stole his blessings. Our sages say those tears carried a weight in heaven. Sisera's mother cries. In the Kabbalistic sources, it says that our blowing of shofar every year is to fend off the weight of Sisera's mother's tears. But they deserved it. And yet you see that tears carry a special weight in heaven.
He said he wasn't interested in Bechorah. He said, I'm going to die anyway. So
the Jews continue sinning, and Hashem gives them in the hands of the Midianites. The Midianites were nomadic tribes. Remember, Midian is the son of whom? There was a man named Midian. He is the son of last week's parasha. He is the son of Keturah, which means he is the son of Hagar and Avram, right? It says that Vayosef Avram Vaikach Isha Ushma Keturah. Avram took a second wife. Her name was Keturah, which our sages say is Hagar. Vateled lo Esimran vet Midan vet Midian vet Yishbak vet Shuach. So one of the children Avram had from Keturah was Midian. And Midian, one of the children of Avram, developed into this huge nomadic tribe. So the Midianites are out into the east of Israel. And the Midianites would come in swarming with all their tents and all their cattle and consume anything they could find. So the Jews started developing caves so they could hide their produce, so they could hide their belongings. And any time we would plant, Midian would come in. And on the way, they would gather the other tribes of the east, their relatives, and Amalek, and they'd swoop in and destroy anything they could find. So the Jews were severely oppressed by the Midianites, and they called out to Hashem, and Hashem sends them a prophet. Our tradition is that this is Pinchas. And he tells them, Hashem says, I took you out of Egypt. I took you out of servitude. I saved you from the Egyptians, from all the different oppressors. I chased them away. I gave you their land. And I told you, don't serve the gods of the Amori. And you're not listening. So, time to do tshuva. And the Jews don't do tshuva. And so, 7 years they're suffering under the Midianites. And our story begins in Ophrah. There's a man named Yoash. He has a son, Gidon, who is himself a father. Gidon is not a kid. He is a father to children. And Gidon is preparing the wheat to hide from the Midianites. He's threshing the wheat so they could hide it. And our story begins on Pesach. And Gidon says, Dad, you told us an amazing story last night at the Seder. And then he goes to Davin and he says, and an angel appears. And the angel tells him, God is with you, brave one. And Gidon turns to the angel. He says, my master, if Hashem is with us, why are we in such trouble? I heard last night from my father that the Jews were sinning and Hashem saved them from Egypt. So if we're good people, then in our merits Hashem should save us. If we're bad people, just like He saved the Jews in Egypt, Hashem should save us. And Hashem appears and says, you made the claim that was accepted in heaven. With your tefillah, with that claim right now, it was decided that the Jews can be saved from the Midianites. We're going to see that Gidon isn't too learned. Remember, Gidon is coming off of last night's story at the Seder. It doesn't sound like he's the chief rabbi of Israel, and yet he's going to be the leader. And here we have a tremendous point. We learn here that any individual can turn the tide for all of the Jewish people. You don't have to be the chief rabbi. If your davening is meaningful, and you try to find a unique angle to make requests, just as Gidon did, then your tefillah could be the one to change the tide. So Hashem tells him, go save the Jewish people. I'm telling you, go. And Gidon says, I'm the smallest one in Menashe, and I'm the youngest one in the family. How am I going to do this? And this is where we're going to pick up in Zachem next week.